Welcome to Shifting Mindsets for Better Health, a podcast series produced by our partners at Central Michigan University with a grant from the Children's Foundation. COVID-19 has impacted the lives of millions. Sharing information among healthcare professionals is going to be key to saving lives and improving outcomes. This podcast series brings together healthcare professionals across disciplines to share insight into the far-reaching effects this pandemic has on children, caretakers, and medical care providers.
This isn't normal, and this isn't permanent. We really need to get through this time period where we are faced with challenges and stressors that we've never seen before.
When they say it takes a village to raise a child, it really does take a village. And we can be that village if we reach out and help each other to improve our ability to thrive and to grow during this pandemic.
This episode is Mental Health Inequalities and Racism. Persons of color are less likely to seek and receive mental health care. This episode will discuss how the COVID-19 pandemic is exacerbating that reality and what individuals and communities can do to improve access. Dr. Kai Anderson is a psychiatrist and director of psychotherapy training at the CMU College of Medicine. Dr. Anderson has a special interest in how trauma impacts our mental health and well-being. We begin with how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting the mental health of children.
So, in answering your question as to how the pandemic is affecting the mental health of children, it is wreaking havoc on everyone, adults and children both. The impact of COVID-19 has led to decreased ability to connect with others. It limits one's ability to engage in social activities, such as gathering with the family, attending sporting events, and concerts. Individuals are not able to attend traditional church services, which can impact their spiritual nourishment. And of course, delivery of education has been impacted, with some children attending school virtually, some on site, in settings where the contact with other students and teachers may be restricted, and some in hybrid settings. This has led to increased stress, which we see in increased rates of depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and interpersonal violence. Then if you add the impact of institutional and structural racism, which has exacerbated the racial health disparities, you see further erosion of mental health. The rates of suicide in Black children now is rising quicker than any other ethnic or racial group. According to recent statistics from the Congressional Black Caucus, which was issued in December of last year, although white children die at higher rates overall than Black children by suicide, Black children under the age of 13 are twice as likely to die by suicide than by white children. Furthermore, the rate of suicide in Black children has risen by more than 73% between 1991 and 2017. Injuries from attempted suicide increased by 122% for Black boys during the same time period. Now you have ongoing prolonged trauma caused by the confluence of the pandemic due to COVID-19, where multiple Black families and other people of color lost loved ones, and the killing of Black individuals, which has always occurred, which was thrust in the national spotlight when George Floyd was killed on national television, begging for his life and calling for his mother. Then you add a political environment where hate, division, and feelings of entitlement are encouraged by the U.S. president, and science is ignored. And it becomes very clear why there is an increase in depression, anxiety, substance abuse, violence, and rage. And looking at how this causes and leads to additional intergenerational trauma, the take-home message is that even if you're not exposed to the trauma from prior generations, the impact of the trauma is passed down in families. For example, if your ancestor was exposed to a traumatic event, such as war or slavery, it is going to impact their behavior, which is going to influence how they interact with the world, which their children will see, and which will impact their children's behavior. In addition, the traumatic experience is transmitted via epigenetics, which, to put it simply, is the change in gene expression based on environmental influences, which leads to structural changes, which can increase or decrease risk of illness. These behavior and genetic influences can be both harmful and protective. But it's important to focus on encouraging the behaviors and supportive connections with others, which promote resilience and can help to decrease the impact of intergenerational trauma. It is really important because one of the most dire consequences of not responding to the impact of this stress on our mental health and our well-being is the risk of suicide. After a stable period from 2000 to 2007, suicide rates for persons aged 10 to 24 increased from 2007 to 2017, while homicide rates increased from 2014 to 2017. As of 2018, suicide became the second leading cause of death in Black children aged 10 to 14, and the third leading cause of death in Black adolescents aged 15 to 19. Even though these statistics are prior to the pandemic, we have seen a rise in need for mental health services due to the pandemic, and that can lead to both immediate and long-term increases in suicide rates. Looking at the overall long-term effects, it can result in an inability to thrive and reach goals due to the increase in the mental health concerns. And the health disparities increase in mortality for people of color as well. In addition, due to a lack of diversity in the boardroom where decisions are made, solutions can be developed that may not be applicable to all people, which is harmful to everyone, not just people of color.
Dr. Abhishek Bala is a child and adolescent psychiatry fellow at the CMU College of Medicine. He has an MD and a master's degree in public health. Dr. Bala sees the mental health effects of COVID-19 on children and adolescents of color.
Regarding the effects of COVID on minorities, there's a lot of new research out there that does demonstrate this using facts, although I don't have the numbers at the top of my head. I do see this on a personal level in my clinics and in my practice, where you see a lot of socioeconomic disparities when it comes to minority groups. And currently, as kids are getting back into school, you really tend to see the effects of that in these communities. A lot of them don't have internet, and kids have had to be behind for several weeks because they don't have internet, and as a result can't participate in their day-to-day learning. And schools, being overwhelmed by the current crisis, are unable to address the needs of these minority groups who are already are disadvantaged from several aspects, including, like as I mentioned, socioeconomically, or from a history of generational trauma. And it's really sad to see. And we've found that, especially over the past month since schools have reopened, I've had to spend longer time with these families, really trying to address some of the basic needs that they might have. And that might involve including caseworkers into the treatment. It might involve a more active role of schools into their treatment. But I've found that it's definitely been a challenge, and it's something that we as clinicians must be aware of. And even once I think the pandemic is done and dusted, which I know is going to take some time, it's really important for us to introspect and really set up ways of protecting these communities from future scenarios that might put their livelihoods, the kids' education, at risk. And it's something that we really need to sit down and think about.
Dr. Kai Anderson explains some of the mental health resources available to families.
People of color are less likely to receive mental health services. Yes, that is true. We believe that it is due to an access issue and being able to access mental health services because of lack of insurance or transportation, or in this age of COVID, not having the technology to participate in the telehealth services, in addition to having the lack of culturally competent providers. Mental health in particular is stigmatized in the African-American community, and people may not seek out services because of fear of being discriminated against or labeled, quote, weak or crazy. So there's a definite need for culturally competent services aimed at people of color and other marginalized populations. So there are numerous resources available to help children and families, and looking at solutions, some things that are being done are done in various communities. For example, one thing that I've seen based on the pandemic is that people are sharing more and people are coming together more and providing more webinars, more platforms to provide services. In addition, individuals that are in need of resources are being identified and offered services. There's more outreach in the communities. We're providing additional support for families that don't have technology and providing them with support so they can engage in and utilize mental health services. For example, in Saginaw, Thrive, which is a collaboration of the Michigan Health Improvement Alliance, also called MHIA, and the Great Lakes Bay Regional Alliance, they have several key initiatives addressing provider capacity. the social cultural determinants of health, preventative care, and job creation. In addition, there are also several specific areas that we can focus on to engage in promoting hope and resilience throughout the African-American community. So looking at some of the strategies that we can use to address the racial health disparities and social injustice, I listened to a webinar last night by Dr. Jamila Codrington, a Black psychologist from New York, which was sponsored by the Black Therapy Central, on the impact of racism and discrimination on Black health. And one thing that I love was her suggestions to try to focus on six key items to address structural racism, racial health disparities, and social injustice. The six key areas that she suggested we focus on are: one, we need to model hope and optimism through culturally affirming affirmations. For example, Dr. Carrington mentioned that they had a 10-day global healing community challenge where they had a principle each day accompanied with African proverb, such as, quote, "We are a mighty people." This is done to suggest that change can occur, and it can occur now. We don't have to wait. We can practice self-determination, or in the words of Swahili, practice kujichagulia. Resilience is our birthright. We have persevered. We are a strong nation of people. This is not always taught in school, so we can teach this to our youth and help them to feel resilient and hopeful. Secondly, we need to demonstrate community engagement to overcome passivity or learned helplessness. We need to encourage our youth to develop their own strategies to address racial inequities in their community. They are already doing the work. Youth are raising money, creating music, creating chants. We need to help them do the work in the context of their own subculture. And thirdly, we need to decolonize their minds through literature and media. We have to dismantle beliefs about white supremacy. We need to encourage them to read books, watch movies that have Black people as heroes and that are culturally affirming. An excellent example of this is a Black Panther movie. There's a term called Wakanda Forever, and they talk about the fact that Wakanda is a great nation, is a symbol of excellence for everybody. And that's very culturally affirming. Especially now during the period when people are at home, with a quarantine, where children are playing a lot of video games, we can encourage them to read books, view art, and listen to music that is culturally affirming. In addition, we need to develop race consciousness through storytelling. We had a grand rounds in our psychiatry department recently on the power of the narrative and the usefulness of reading to address trauma. I spoke recently at a grand rounds on changing the narrative by addressing race and racism in medicine. We have to help our youth create a narrative that is uplifting. This can be done through sharing how others have navigated and dealt with racism. It's important to remember that as we develop this race consciousness through storytelling, that we don't re-traumatize our youth and make sure that our stories are developmentally and age appropriate. In addition, we need to teach them the difference between reacting versus rising above. In other words, teach them how to deal with racism while also focusing on self-preservation. How do you balance the two? How do you focus on advocating for yourself while you're also faced with the risks of real consequences, such as being arrested, job loss, or even death? We need to teach them to look for signs of safety and allyship. The allyship can be partnering with an individual who is also focused on racial equity. The goal is to engage the ally and help them to leverage their white privilege to accomplish change to minimize danger. For example, if you see a person of color being subjected to racism as a white individual, you can speak up and support that individual by using your white privilege. Another example of using your white privilege could be if you look at the protests, you may see what's called a white shield, where you see white individuals at the front line of the protests and Black individuals coming along behind them, so the white individuals can act as a shield to protect the Black individuals from danger. We want to use clinical vignettes to help our youth understand how to accomplish this and make quick decisions, because we want to make sure that they stay safe while they're advocating for themselves. And then finally, in the words of John Lewis, we need to encourage our youth to, quote, make good trouble. We want to help them identify what they can be inspired by. We want to help them to move forward without holding on to hate. We want to help them to understand how they can use their rage to inspire themselves and inspire others, but also want to make sure that they live another day. And good examples of this concept illustrated in several films that I love. One is called Queen and Slim, and also The Hate U Give. They focus on the injustices of racial disparities, racism, and police brutality. As we do this work, we need to recognize the subculture of our youth. We need to recognize the language that they speak. I remember as I was focusing on activism in the 70s, and I listened to Gil Scott-Heron, he talked about the fact that the revolution would not be televised in one of his songs. But actually, it is televised, but also it's spread through social media. It's spread digitally. It's spread through viral videos, through memes, through hashtags. The youth like to use expressive art, music, culture, street art, graffiti, writing. We need to listen to their messages and not try and censor them, because only through listening to their messages the way that they want to give it will we be able to really understand and connect with our youth. And these are the tools that they use that we can use to also engage and connect with our young people. And as psychiatrists, we're used to prescribing medication and engaging in talk therapy. We have to expand our toolkit, begin to think about using music in our treatment sessions, watching videos with our patients, reading books, and using poetry slams to help them express their thoughts, their feelings, in ways that we can understand. And by doing this, we can focus on the counter-narrative to racism, and that is based on a term from Dr. Codrington, the term of, quote, radical Black joy. Basically, what it means is that there's a term that we can use to help patients and others illustrate the fact that they can still have a state of joy despite the trauma that we're going through right now. And this is an active form of resistance by engaging in joyful celebration.
Gaps in access to services are seen as normal and acceptable. The first step to closing the gap is acknowledging the disparities in mental health services along lines of race and socioeconomic status. The next step is to create a culture that finds these disparities unacceptable. Thank you to Drs. Kai Anderson and Abhishek Bala for providing their expertise in mental health inequalities and racism. To find out about our other podcasts, go to med.cmich.edu/shiftingmindsets. The Shifting Mindsets for Better Health podcast series is a production of the College of the Arts and Media, the College of Medicine, and the Interdisciplinary Center for Community Health and Wellness at Central Michigan University. Executive producer and host is Dr. Heather Polinsky. Interview recording and editing by Mr. Michael Potter. Produced by Drs. Judy Blabia, Allison Arnold, and John Lowry. Funded by a grant from the Children's Foundation